This is a podcast from Cambridge Assessment. For more downloads, visit cambridgeassessment.org.uk.
Thank you very much indeed, Shana. Thank you indeed, all of you, for the debate. I'm not going to attempt to summarise proceedings in any way at all, and of course I stand between you and the after-conference drinks or your trains, but Bennett knows well that doesn't stop me. I'm just going to reflect on a couple of things. As a critic of inappropriate top-level assertions about key aspects of education systems, regrettably, some of the things that are coming out of OECD at the moment, I extract any kind of concluding observations which go across nations with considerable care. I think what we've learned today is that very complex relations play out through the presentations from the economic analysis from the beginning through, from the various perspectives from different countries and different dimensions of private and public provision. We know that economic, political, social forces are playing out in complex ways, and that's without thinking about the insights we now have into cognitive development. We haven't mentioned neuroscience. It's a bizarre conference which doesn't mention that these days. Now, in talking about that complexity, we can't really stop there. It's a truism just to say it's complex, and so often conferences and discussions reach that conclusion. I think today we've gone beyond simply saying that. We've gone to say that we can examine how that complexity plays out in different circumstances, how historical processes are unfolding. And that's important, because if we are going to act as educationalists, to actually devise policy and implement it, we do have to know what we're doing. We can't just poke systems with some broad notion of, oh, it may help. These things cost money, they have consequences. So we have to act with both moral and technical purpose. So I think we have gone beyond some crude opposition of a romantic idea of a global family or world culture versus an unfeeling, aggressive, liberal individualism. No, we've begun to think hard about what's at play and how we can begin to interact with it, how we can begin to harness those forces. I mean, I'm minded of an anecdote, actually, a very interesting issue, but it appears anecdotal. I talked, when I was doing the curriculum review, about how Hong Kong ranks their students. They rank their students, they rank their schools, they just rank everything in education all the time. And most European educationalists think this is an extraordinarily bad thing, because it generates a horrible opposition between children. Only it doesn't. I mean, what's fascinating is that in the effort, in the bid to actually climb over everybody else, it actually unleashes collaborative learning between pupils. And of course, it raises the standards for everybody. And it raises the standards relative to the nation's past and to other nations. Now, that's a really challenging thought. And it's those kind of insights and those little anecdotes, those snippets of realities in other systems, which can unlock new thinking in our own systems. What we've heard today is about different layers of goods, of individual goods, social goods, economic goods, and national goods. And we've heard that nations may aspire to be better, but it's actually individuals who do the learning. And that's not saying that there is no such thing as society, or that collective competence isn't in work groups, in enterprises, isn't important. But these are interesting tensions. Now, this gives rise to an idea of, well, what's the unit of focus in international education? And we discussed this at a seminar in Nuffield some years ago. What's the unit of focus of your activity and your engagement? And who is engaging? Who is acting? Is your focus the nation, the region, the school, the international community? Or is it international enterprises, as Jens Bjørnevatn now says, organisations that we've heard today cross national boundaries and take ideas and activities with them? So, for me, this issue of at what level are you trying to engage, what kind of unit are you trying to affect, is quite important in terms of your aim. It's interesting that Mark and I were talking right at the outset about Finland. I begin most of my lectures on Finnish educational success now by saying, have you heard about the one about Finland? It's not true. Because you have to get underneath the skin of these systems. And in Finland, we find something very interesting. Many Finnish educators trace the success of national education in Finland to relentless individualization of their curriculum and their concern for learning, to really attend to the needs of individual children, so that, interestingly, almost every child in Finland will have been attended to in some form of special education throughout their educational period. It's not stigmatised. It's just designed to optimise the learning of all children, challenging ideas. And this in a nation which understood that if it did not do something, it would remain moribund and its economic position would be disastrous. What we know and what we've heard today is that personal capitals, the things that people, individuals own, and I would argue, you know, subject specialisms are critical in this, convey personal advantage. And what we've understood is that personal advantage can translate into the success of societies and into the success of communities. But we also know, in certain forms, it can be elitist. It can actually drive wedges between communities and actually cause problems in respect to social cohesion. So, I like today's emphasis on sophistication in understanding the curriculum, in approaching international comparisons in a sophisticated way. I like the idea that we need to link research, policy and action far more coherently and judge that research judiciously. So I personally am going to take a lot of things away from today. And many of the ideas, I think, are extremely well-founded. And I think it's great that we can discriminate between those that are well-founded and those that are misleading. I think what's interesting is that ideas, of course, both well-founded and misleading, entirely wrong, in fact, can flow around the world in ways unimagined 20 years ago. Orthodoxies, ideologies can flow between nations and between groups of young people all too easily. And interestingly, picking up the point that Dina raised, the speed with which those ideas can be spread and take hold is well out of sync with the time frames for effective and well-considered and well-implemented programs for enhancing education. That's quite challenging, actually. Educational change does take time. Perhaps we can often do it faster than we think, but well-considered change, which enjoys social consensus, that's not easy and it takes time. Social movements can thus easily outpace what we want to achieve by way of improvement in education systems, and I think that's something that researchers, policymakers, and implementers need to deal with. So a couple of closing points. In other words, new ideology and youth culture is coming your way soon, along with new economic pressures. That's pretty difficult. So I think, drawing to a close, I think we have heard real success stories. We have heard deep insights into what we can do. I think we've heard an admonition from Isabel to productively confront hard questions about value and culture and not just ignore them. So that's it, really. I think that's a lot. I think it's a lot that I'm taking away, and I hope that you've got something from the day too. Drinks are here and they're at the conference, and they're after this final bit, and they're over in the Howard Building. That's a building just a few yards outside the doors. Can I now just conclude on thanks, really? Can I thank all of you for contributing so actively, despite a very quiet moment, actually, at the beginning of Sean's section. Black mark there. Thanks to all our colleagues in other nations, Mexico, Argentina, India, Egypt, and South Africa. Thanks to all our speakers, and I think it's been a remarkable conference in respect of their high commitment to linking all of their contributions tightly to the theme of the conference. You don't often get that, and it's good. And finally, thanks to the conference organising team. I can't thank them all, but Faye, Seeger, Carrie and others, there's many of them, and they've done a fantastic job to make today run seamlessly. And to the media team. Hell, mostly it's worked, which is fantastic. So to you, to the contributors, to the speakers and to the team that have organised the event so flawlessly, many thanks and safe journeys. Thank you very much indeed.
This is a podcast from Cambridge Assessment. For more downloads, visit cambridgeassessment.org.uk.